The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today's episode is a fun one. We're talking about threat assessment. Threat assessment. The assessment of threats.
I was trying to come up with a sound effect, but I couldn't come up with one.
I feel like it's like a shield getting hit by a sword or something. I don't know.
Although I was thinking high-tech computer that was like the, you know, when you go to the Terminator's POV?
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, school teacher, and it sort of like doesn't worry about that. And then it's like, oh no, I see a weapon. That guy's got a weapon. Danger. And then that's what I was thinking.
I see Kiki Jiki on the table. And yeah, the whole HUD turns red.
We found the sound effect, everybody. It's
it's a lot of beeps
that's
and boops.
Clearly the, yeah, it's like a telemetry satellite, actually.
This is not an endorsement to see that movie, by the way, because it looks terrible. Anyway, to get back on track, we also have a very special guest today. We have Graham from Loading Ready Run on the podcast. Hey, Graham, how's it going?
Hey, it's going very well. How are you both?
Great. And finally, we have someone on the podcast that's also from the West Coast, which is great. We don't have to do some crazy time switches.
This is actually the first podcast I have ever guest appeared on that has been in my own time zone. It's the best.
I know, the sun just set. It's like a little after 8:30. We can all go to bed at a reasonable hour, so very glad that happened.
I'm actually going to go draft right after this.
Oh, really? Nice. What are you drafting?
We're drafting Dragon's Fate. It's a friend of mine had some store credit left, and it was my birthday on Saturday, so he was like, well, you know what I'm going to do? It's draft time.
Nice. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And you got a full draft set out of it, clearly.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's kind of the, you know, it has to be the continuation since your birthday was so recently. How do you like that format, by the way? There's been mixed opinions about it.
I like it. I think I need to go back and try Triple Cons again, because I think I like Triple Cons a little better, but I like this better than Fate Cons.
I 100% agree.
Fate Cons was a mess.
Fate Cons was not great, but Triple Cons was, I thought, awesome. I loved it.
Did you open the bomb rare Y/N?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That makes it less fun, really, because...
And it's also like it's out of the first pack. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I think also like the commons were so bad in Fate that like what you ended up doing was getting like three playables and then... most of the rest of that stuff didn't make your deck, which just doesn't feel that fun, especially in the first pack.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It always felt kind of panicky after the first pack where you're like, I might have one really good card and then two or three other playables and everything. Like, I need 18 more cards to fill out my deck here.
It's way more secure from the other side when you have a deck and you're like, oh, look at this convenient card I can bring in that just makes it a little better instead of having to base your deck off of that.
Instead, the pack is like, can I interest you in a variety of rune marks?
Oh, God. Yeah. There's always like three rune marks at the end of every pack, and you're like, I guess I'll take a blue one.
I'm going to call those cards rune marks from now on, if it's just a worthless enchantment that adds some power, toughness, and a keyword.
No matter what set it is.
No matter what, because it happens in every set.
It looks like there's actually quite a few of them in Origins.
Yeah,
actually,
some of them say draw a card, which makes me excited.
Actually, I think if you're going for sort of like, if you're looking to codify that kind of card in the same way that like a piker is a 2/1 for 2 or a bear is a 2/2 for 2. If you're looking to codify that, I think honestly clue stone would be a better thing than
Cluestone.
Rune mark. Because the clue stones in Dragon's Maze, there was 10 of them.
Oh yeah.
They were so many and you were like, this is not a key rune.
No.
The key runes were good. This is fine.
Yeah, it's like those mana rocks you got as well.
Like the banners.
Yeah, versus.
Yeah.
We should say, because we didn't even talk about it, so Loading Ready Run.
Oh, right. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, we should go into what that is in case people... I'm sure most people do know who Graham is, but do you want to explain what Loading Ready Run is for those few listeners who may not know, Graham?
I've been trying to figure out what Loading Ready Run is for, for 10 years now. We started in 2003 doing sketch comedy. And since then, we have sort of grown into a video production house. Depending on who I'm talking to, I'll say like, oh, we're a video production company. Or I'll be like, we're streamers and YouTubers. It depends entirely on the audience. Meeting. But
yeah, yeah.
Relating to magic, we produce the show Friday Nights, which is basically a sitcom, I guess you'd say, about our playgroup playing magic. We produce that for Wizards of the Coast. We do our own podcast, which you should also check out, called Tap Tap Concede, which is a casual magic podcast because we are a bunch of filthy casuals.
And welcome to the club.
Welcome to the club. We're all taking that foil goif. That's the end of story.
and we stream. We stream magic every Thursday on twitch.tv/loadingreadyrun.
And you guys also do draft videos, right?
Yeah, we do. We do draft videos for MTGO Academy every 2 weeks. And I used to do some on my own, but I haven't had time recently because we make a lot of things.
You guys have a ton of stuff on there. If you go to their YouTube page, which is youtube.com/loadingreadyrun, you'll see they've got a ton of different sketch comedy sort of series. Like, you guys have multiple series. They're not even all about magic, which is, I think, great because, you know, you can go there and watch the magic stuff, but it also introduces you to, like, other just cool things where it's not so like narrow.
And someone's streaming for you right now, right? Are they playing Civilization? I kind of caught like the tail end of it.
Yeah, Cam is playing, because we're recording on Wednesday evenings and it's Cameron's time slot. He's playing Civ 5. Sometimes Cameron will play stuff like, sometimes he'll play Magic as well, but he'll play stuff like XCOM or
Dark, nice. I love that game.
Dark Souls or something. He tends to play strategy games on the hardest possible difficulty settings because...
Oh, jeez.
I love that.
Because he hates himself, I think. And, we have...
Appreciates a challenge.
We do magic every Thursday, but we have our... We sort of run our Twitch channel like a TV station, basically, and everybody in the crew has their own show, and they do their own games and their own style of program. So I really feel like we have something for everybody over there.
Something for everyone.
Twitch.tv. Yeah, so make sure you guys also check them out on Twitch. I've been watching so much Twitch recently, and I love seeing you or James pop into the chat of some other channel and just saying some stuff. I'm like, whoa, nice. Nice to see you guys here, too.
I will say, too, that your draft videos, I don't know if people aren't familiar, like a lot of times you guys do sort of stipulation drafts or sort of crazy draft. If you don't know what a stipulation draft is, you guys will say, I don't know, I remember watching one once where you're like...
Wacky stipulations.
You had to draft whoever had the coolest hat on.
Yeah, that
like
was...
Whatever
that
card
was
had
our,
the coolest hat.
That was one of our earliest, most famous ones. It was during Innistrad block. We had to pick the card with the best hat.
There are a lot of hats in that set, too.
Innistrad had a strong hat meta. It was really good. Though we did find ourselves in the situation of having to take a... I can't even remember the name of the card. I'll have to look it up. It's the card, it's like a single black. It gives the creature undying. It's like a guy coming through like a trap door in the floor, and there was literally nothing else in the pack, and we're like, I guess this guy is wearing the trap door as a hat. It's amazing what you notice when you start looking at the cards though. Saving Grasp. The single blue mana to bounce a creature to your hand, and then you can flash it back for a single white. Mm-hmm. And it's the guy falling off the cliff. And in the background, his hat is flying away, and we're like, oh, there's a hat!
That's amazing. What was the best card that had a hat that you were happy to pick?
Oh, geez, that's tough. There's so many. It was actually a pretty good deck. There's some just fantastic... like big tricorn ridiculous looking hats.
I thought you were gonna just say good cards blog. In there, but you said tricorn instead. Yeah. That's amazing.
Look, I'm just saying the hats were very strong.
Yeah, indeed. That's great too. I know people that build EDH decks like that. I mean, we saw a couple when we were in Vegas, just stipulation as to what cards you can have in
there. Oh yeah, for sure. Very cool stuff. In fact, we're gonna talk about your deck later, Graham, which this is the first time we're gonna talk about a deck that has been withheld from us. So Graham didn't want us to see it before we started talking about it because he wanted us to be surprised. So we're going to be learning about it just along with the listeners here.
I'm excited.
Yeah, that's actually really fun for us because normally we've broken it down and we know every piece. So we're going to be more like an audience member on this.
I wanted you to be surprised.
Yeah.
I appreciate you allowing me that on your show that you allowed me to surprise you.
Yes. It's going to be great. It's going to be like playing it for the first time.
The card, by the way, was called Undying Evil. I had to look it up.
Undying Evil. Man, I wouldn't know the name of that one because I never ever played it.
We'll just call him Trapdoor Hat.
Yeah.
that's all that matters in this case.
So, Graham, do you want to talk about your experience with EDH? Do you guys play a lot of EDH, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, we don't actually get around to playing as much of it as we'd like to, but I guess that could be true for anything. It was one of the earliest formats that we sort of learned about, and we loved the idea. Once we realized that our local metagame here in Victoria was very, very competitive when it came to standard, we were the idea of a casual, less competitive format really appealed to us and the way that we like to play. That said, we've had games of Commander last for hours and hours and hours and hours.
Haven't we all?
Yep. And, you know, we've had to
do like your non-competitive spirit now.
Yeah, we've had to do the sort of the self-policing, like, well, I'm not going to play against your deck anymore because it's not fun.
That took a little too long, yeah.
Yeah, but... yeah, it's something that we all certainly enjoy. Well, I say we all certainly enjoy. I mean, at one time or another, everybody in the crew has had a Commander deck. At present, it's not something that Cam and Alex are as much into, because Alex is really big into Highlander, which is a really
Victoria-specific.
It's a great movie.
Just the first one, though.
Yeah.
It's a format that's played like in Victoria, BC, where we're from, and... Melbourne, Australia, and Germany. We actually just did an episode on it. It's a 100-card singleton format that's like Commander, except it's basically just like, it's like playing Vintage. It's played heads up. It's not multiplayer. It's a very, very different thing. It's super, super competitive. Commander.
We have a group in LA that plays Highlander Roulette, but theirs is it's not like Vintage.
Right.
They only allow cards that have ever been available in a foil printing. Yeah, but it's the same thing. It's 100 cards.
Yeah,
and you have singleton, to build. And it's
there's no commanders,
1v1.
Right?
Yeah. So Commander is much more my kind of speed because I like being able to have fun with the decks. Once I found out about the format, I just went, oh, okay, cool. What's the color combination I like? I like green-white. Let's look for commanders that are green-white. Who's this guy? Rhys the Redeemed. He seems fun. Okay. He's my commander. Now let's just look at Gatherer for every card that is green and white.
That's
let's
a good
put,
start.
Let's put all of those into the deck. That deck is still pretty cool, actually. I have won many games with that deck, with my life total being at like 150.
That nice. Commander is single-handedly one of the most powerful as well. Just playing Selesnya Guildmage and Modern Masters.
You just have a lot of mana
and
Rhys.
Yeah.
If you just have a lot of mana and Rhys, you can win.
Like. Yeah. I didn't know that at the time. This is Kathleen came into a similar problem where she's like, well, I want to make a tribal commander deck. What's a cool tribe? What colors do I like? Ooh, I know. Blue and black. I'll do a fairies deck. This will be perfect. I'll get Una and I'll do a bunch of fairies. And then she builds the deck. And then someone who had been playing for years sort of comes up and is like, you realize that this is a known, disgustingly powerful archetype, right?
Yeah. Una is like one of the more powerful commanders.
Yeah, that was not known when we built the deck, but woof, it's real strong.
Well, it's one of the fun things about the format, too, which is that you can build the super powerful mean version of Una, or you can build the version of Una that's like, you know, you just have cards you like that are in those colors in there, and that's
and
totally
all
fine too.
They happen to be extraordinarily mean because it's blue black.
Yeah, they don't have to be. I'm just saying, like, you know, you can see the same commander from different people, and it's not like modern or standard where you see a couple cards and you know most of the deck already.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get into our main topic here, which we're calling threat assessment. It's a topic we've been asked about a lot. Mm. We're gonna cover it here, sort of. We're just going to touch on it here.
This happens also in the game more than almost any other sort of political thing that happens, is the idea of threat assessment happens from the first game you play to the very last.
Yeah, and I think it's really complicated in EDH too. It's more complicated than in other forms of Magic because
it's the Wild West. You got so many people staring you down.
Well, right. It's not just a threat assessment as far as the stuff on the table. It's also which player is the threat. Whereas in 1v1, you already know that.
Yeah.
It's just the person across from you. And now it's like, I have a hero's downfall. Do I want to use it? And if so, on what that they have? Now all of a sudden you're like, I have a hero's downfall. Do I want to use it on Jimmy or Craig or Alex? And which of their threats? And
when and how am I going to do it?
and a lot of times you don't even want to use it at all because it's like, well, Alex already is fighting Jimmy, so I don't want to get involved in that. Mm-hmm. And Craig doesn't seem to be mad at me right now, so why would I even use this thing? So there's all this other thought process that goes into it in Commander that's above and beyond what you would, you know, the complexity that you'd have in a 1v1 game.
So really, in this show, this podcast dedicated to celebrating the Commander format, you're dealing with here the literal worst thing about Commander.
It's the thing that we get asked about a ton, right? Which is...
Oh, yeah, it's so true.
I think because it's really frustrating, too, to other players to watch other players...
Do it incorrectly.
Quote-unquote incorrectly, yeah, exactly. You know?
From their eyes.
The problem that we encounter is this notion that because Commander is a fun, casual format that you're supposed to be enjoying playing with friends, that you can't crush somebody, basically. I've had to avoid games of Commander lasting hours and hours, I have had to be like, I'm deciding that I'm going to defeat this player because they are the weakest and it will make the game end more quickly. Because too many times we've been like, oh, so-and-so's kind of hampered on land, so we're just going to sort of ignore them, and then they win.
They always win.
They always do.
They always win.
It's just like, hey, guess what? Your hand has 3 lands and 4 cards. They have 7 cards and 0 lands. Like, who do you want going into the late game?
Well, that's another decision you never have to make in a one-on-one game, mm-hmm. where it's like, do I finish off this person that's sort of limping around over there, or like, take on this person who's becoming a monster,
yeah,
like in attack, front of my eyes.
It's not just, is it worth it for me to attack player A? It's, is it worth it enough for me to attack player A and leave myself open to player B?
Yeah, and maybe C and D too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, obviously when I attack player A, they are now out for my blood, but there's other players here. And it just, the whole concept of threat assessment in Commander is, I can see why you get asked about it a lot.
Yeah, I think the biggest gripe really is that idea, though, where it's like, you know, hey, I'm going to leave myself open to swing at player B, and the crackback I know is guaranteed from one person, but hopefully someone else doesn't see me doing something and being like, well, that means I should attack him now. Look, he's limping around too after this battle. It's like, oh boy. There's so much stuff that can go wrong as soon as you're the first person to take action, and everyone's always yelling at everyone else to take action. Like, you go first.
That's why everybody wants to push somebody else to be doing the thing, because it takes care of the problem, but you didn't actually have to open yourself up to any retaliation if somebody mm-hmm. else did it. Yeah, it's so interwoven with the politics of EDH. I think people separate them. They're not super separate, because part of threat assessment and why people get mad, they're like, why don't you kill that thing instead of this thing? And it's like, well, because politically,
yeah,
you know, if I kill that consecrated sphinx, Jimmy now is going to come after me, whereas I'm already fighting you, so I don't want two enemies. Yeah. So yeah, consecrated sphinx is powerful, but I have no chance to win 2v1. So
also, he has 6 more cards than I do. I don't want to go against him anytime
that's
soon.
Another thing I see all the time at the table, which is like, people want to attack the person in the best position. So they go, well, you look like you're the most powerful. I'm going to go after you.
King
and it's
hill.
Like, that's crazy. If you're, let's say you were in prison and for, I don't know
for
why.
For all us Magic players.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say you were in a cage match.
Okay,
you know,
sure.
one of those old style, like WWE cage matches.
A cage match in prison.
Okay. Yes. I like this. Okay. This is getting even better.
Yeah.
And there's 3 other guys. And you're going to square off, and it, you know, it's the last man standing. You're not going to just go up and hit the biggest guy, you know. You're probably going to go after the guy that looks like you might be able to take on. So,
yeah.
You know, when people attack the person that's in the best position, sometimes I'm like, well, that's kind of questionable. I wouldn't kick the giant in the toe necessarily.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Let's talk about some factors that you think about when you're determining who to attack, Graham. Now, you said just to end the game sometimes, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable, like, reasonable reason.
Yeah, it's a very reasonable reason. Well, it's as reasonable as it gets.
We get so caught up in, like, well, I want to be fair, and I attacked you last turn, so this turn I'm going to attack this other person. Mm-hmm. And then it just, no one's willing to, like everyone's like, well, we're all playing a competitive game, and we all know that we'll have to start attacking people eventually. So my hands are sort of tied, but I don't really want to be attacking anybody. And it's like, no. We'll be here all week. Someone's got to attack somebody someday. So let's start the process wherein we can get lunch eventually.
Yeah,
because it feels like you're actually being mean when you attack somebody, but by ending the game faster, you might be able to play a couple more games,
yeah,
which is actually being nice when you think about it.
Yeah.
I think the idea that you are quote-unquote being mean in a game where your job is to be the last person standing should... I think people take that like one step too far sometimes, where it's like, well, I'm just not going to attack anyone, and it's going to be okay. And we'll talk about... Well, that's one of the factors of threat assessment as well, is the pillow fort.
Yeah. Well, what do you... I mean, Jimmy, what do you sort of calculate when you're deciding who to attack? Or who to... It's not even just attack. Sometimes it's just make a move against.
Make a move against, or maybe even just pay more attention to. Because one of the big things I found is good threat assessment means that you have a general like awareness of everything that's happening around the table, but you are focusing on the important things. So if someone just has like two things out that don't do anything synergistically with each other, you know the deck, you know that it's going to take a while for them to do something. You don't look at that. You look at the guy, for instance, in the beginning of the game that has... three mana dorks out, that has a Fate Stitcher, and that has just put out a Gilded Lotus in turn three, and you look at them and you go, okay, that person, because of ramp specifically, is the bigger threat at the table because they are holding a lot more power in terms of how much mana they can generate. That's one of the first things I look at in the early game. Now, that changes drastically as soon as the game really starts going and everyone has access to, like, 10 lands. And if as soon as everyone's at, like, cast Insurrection status, ramp isn't as important.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Unless they have a way to abuse it, like a Comet Storm or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Graham, is there anything you look for when you're just looking around the table and trying to decide, like, sort of who to go after or who to make a move against?
I can't think of anything general. I just know from, again, personal experience in our own playgroup, Matt tried to play a Sliver deck once.
Yeah, you can just stop right there.
Once. And yeah, he tried to play it more than once, but it was always like, why do you guys keep killing all my stuff? And we're like, dude,
they're all lords.
If we don't, you'll win the game. We have to kill them before you get Crystalline Sliver down, or we're all effed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think knowledge of your opponent's deck is a really big thing. Mm-hmm. So if you play in a playgroup and you're playing with the same people and the same decks all the time, then that's, you know, that's part of playing the meta, but it's knowing like, uh-oh, this card hit the table.
Well, I mean, just look at their commander. If their commander is Sliver Queen, well,
that might be the first deck you need, or at least you need to keep them under control constantly. Yeah.
Well, that's the whole judge a book by its cover thing, and like we said, I mean, Kathleen playing an Una deck as like originally, it may have started very weak, but it doesn't matter. Like, to someone that just sits down and only sees that and doesn't have prior knowledge of the person, because you can't really expect everyone they play against to have that, the commander is definitely one of the top threat assessment things. You just go straight into it. It's okay, who's going to kill me the easiest based on my commander and theirs?
Oh, the Una deck was never weak. We just didn't know. She was just like, these all seem like good cards. And then we started playing with it, and we're like, oh, this is brutal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, another thing I would say is a lot of times there's a commander that like straight up counters your commander or your deck. So let's say you're playing Anafenza and I'm playing Caridor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to just come after you as hard as I can because I can't win the game against your deck, really.
Or find a way to establish some kind of like, look, give me a couple, don't just play it out, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, you're right. Like there are a lot of commanders that do that too, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Either in different colors or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times you know my deck's really weak to tokens. Mm-hmm. And then Graham comes and sits down and he flips over Reese and you're like, okay, I can't beat a token strategy. So my only chance is to sort of get you out of the game fast.
Yeah.
Or early. And so sometimes that'll force your hand.
Well, it's interesting, too, because threat assessment is also something that doesn't force your hand, if that makes sense, where you may draw a board wipe early, and you know that that's one of your three outs in the deck against a token deck once it gets going crazily, so you know that you have to hold on to it. So instead of playing your hand out, you know that this card is more important than it is in any normal matchup because of your threat assessment of whoever's on the table.
And even related to that, it also makes the token deck something there's always counter spells, but you don't need to worry about it. You're just sort of like, okay, the token deck can do its thing and maybe hit me a couple times, but eventually I'll slam this wrath and then they'll have nothing.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's a really good position to be in, too, because you don't know that the token deck's even going to come after you first. Mm-hmm. And the best position to be in is a position where, like, he made a million tokens, and then he attacked Jimmy with them. This is great.
Yeah. This is fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know why he didn't split his million tokens up across all three, but I'll take it.
One piece of information that I see people continuously overlook is just the amount of cards someone has in their hand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel like people don't give enough weight in general to, like, the guy that's got, you know, 12, 14, 20 cards.
Yeah.
And a lot of times his board won't look super impressive, but he's just holding a grip of cards. And it's like, that guy's the problem. You know, and
unless he's mana screwed, womp womp.
Yeah,
just kidding.
And if he's mana screwed, you got to do what Graham said, which is get him out now before he can cast all 20 of those cards.
Yeah, it's very true. Oh, Pillow Fort is something we wrote down on the the outline, and this is really interesting because this is kind of similar to being mana screwed, except you're in a better position.
It's orchestrated, right?
It's orchestrated. Yeah, you put this Pillow Fort up, and everyone's like, "Well, I'm just going to bounce off of him. I don't want to pay extra mana to attack through his whatever." And so you're like, oh, sweet, excellent. And you get to build up your hand and not play stuff out as quickly. And you get to put, I mean, sometimes the most dangerous person is the person that no one's attacking for good reason.
Yeah, I think most of the time, if everybody else is attacking each other and there's one guy and he's sitting there behind a propaganda,
yeah,
that's probably the guy that's going to win the game. Because if everybody else is fighting each other.
Oh, it makes his or her life just way easier.
Yeah, and if clearly their deck is built to take advantage of it. Otherwise, why'd they put propaganda in their deck? So, yeah. Those cards are so powerful because they don't stop them from attacking each other. They just stop them from attacking you.
Yeah, pretty much. Do you have any Pillow Fort players in your group or people that just love propaganda? Because I see Josh play that card almost every game, I swear.
No. That or Ghostly Prison.
Yeah, they're both amazing.
No, we did an episode of Friday Nights about us playing Commander, and in the episode we scripted Jer to have a Feldegriff deck. That was like a group hug Pillow Fort kind of thing, and people were like, "Oh man, I want the deck list for that." And it wasn't a real deck, but then we for the DVD we did he actually made a deck, and we did like a deck tech for it. And it's like, yeah, I'm totally up for letting you draw me a bunch of cards, but then when I have to kill you, now I don't know what to do. I tell you though, I have stolen more games of Commander with Fracturing Gust in that Reese deck. That card is real.
What does it do?
It casts for green and white mana. It was actually just reprinted in the Wrath.
You're right.
In the Vault,
insane.
So it's two colorless and three hybrid green white mana for an instant. Which is extra fun, destroy all artifacts and enchantments, and you gain two life for each permanent destroyed this way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that card is good.
That is a house.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just like, oh, this seems like it would be cool to put in my first Commander deck because it's green and white, so I'll put it in this deck. and then while playing various games, I was sort of like, oh, this card just wins me this game now.
Yeah, you gain like 40 life off of it because everyone's just low. I mean, there's one thing I don't think people realize, and this is because people take their artifacts and slide them down to their lands once they become just mana producers. It's like, you don't realize that guy has like three mana rocks or whatever, but artifacts always crowd the table without you realizing it.
And every deck's playing mana rocks because every deck needs ramp, and if you're not in green, then you have to play mana rocks. So you're just always going to get three or four things from everybody.
Well, yes, I will gain all that life, please.
Yeah, thank you, and just shut you guys down.
Yeah, especially because you're able to, and again, we talk about this, because you know what's going on the board, and you have a card that affects that, you can play around your own card, which is always powerful in EDH. All right,
well, it's a good initial discussion about threat assessment. I mean, we're going to go too deep, because we do want to talk about Graham's surprise deck.
Yeah, and this is a topic that we can definitely return to, and we could spend an entire episode just covering three of the threat assessment things that happen, or two, you know. It's very deep, and like the nice thing about having stories and your examples, Graham, is that there are so many things that Josh and I have just never seen happen before in games, so the more we play, the better we get at this sort of specific idea of threat assessment, but also just opens us up to more crazy options and things that I probably never would have expected to happen.
I would say, though, you know, one thing we hear a lot is people getting really frustrated with the other players for not playing the way they want them to, basically. Mm-hmm. And I would just tone that way down, folks.
Yeah.
Just tone that way, way down. Because part of actually maybe the thing that makes Commander so great is the unpredictability of social dynamics and how people react differently mm-hmm. than you're going to react. If everybody played the game like how you play, you probably wouldn't enjoy it very much. It's a lot better to be playing a game against a bunch of people who are making decisions that are totally different than how you would make the decisions.
Yeah.
That's what's really fun about gaming in general. So,
gotta love the wild card.
Yeah, exactly. So just tone down that frustration. That's that's what's causing a lot of the fun in the game. You don't really want to take that out.
Yeah. Also, Magic is an expression of your individuality when it comes to EDH, because your deck really is, it's like a test. It's like a Freudian, I don't know. You can look at the cards in the deck and be like, I think I get a better understanding of who this person is based on these cards.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think in many ways, you are sort of the decks you build and the way that you play the game.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Graham, let's find out who you are.
Yeah, who are you, Graham, and who is this? What is this deck? But before we get to the deck tech, today's episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. I don't know if you guys know about Loot Crate. I am a personal huge fan because, one, I know almost all the guys that work at this company. And they've worked really closely with us on VGHS in the past, as well as my last Indiegogo for my musical comedy Band-Aid. And essentially, it's a subscription box filled with cool gamer, pop culture stuff, apparel, collectibles, t-shirts, all sorts of sort of exclusive things. And for less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 of these items. And the months are always themed. It's a really cool way just to get sort of like a, I don't know, I call it like a monthly allowance for a present for yourself every single month. And right now, if you guys go to lootcrate.com/command and enter in command as your code, just the word command, you get to save $3 on any new subscription. And it's always great because every single box has a lot of exclusive stuff in it as well. And Loot Crate always really takes care to make sure that each subscription box is super legit. They do not pull any punches here. They're really giving you the full value of the box, sometimes a lot more too. So I can't highly recommend it enough. If you guys want to find out more about Loot Crate, just go to lootcrate.com/command. You can find out all the stuff there. And it's going to be a really good year for Loot Crate because, if you guys didn't know, there's a movie called Star Wars coming out, and there is some really cool stuff coming up in the Loot Crate as well. And the only way you can find out about it is if you go to the website right now, check out the box, find out, I mean, go online and go to YouTube, watch some people unboxing these things. You'll get to see that they are legit and they are filled with a lot of really cool stuff, and you get your full value's worth. So definitely check it out, lootcrate.com/command. And enter the code command. You guys save $3 on any new subscription. And with that, let's get back to the deck tech.
What is this surprise deck? Who's the commander?
That's always the first surprise, because I will say, oh yeah, I have this really cool tree folk deck that I enjoy, and people are like, oh yeah, Doran, right? And no, Doran's boring. Everybody does Doran. That's that's cool and all, but there's a lot of those, and this is a very, very...
I was about to build a Doran deck.
I know. This is a very different deck. This is a...
How you pulled your punch there to like, oh, wait, I don't want to insult all the Doran players.
I know, right?
Shout out to Vincent. I know you have a Doran deck.
I'm going to build one.
But you're not that cool.
Sorry, buddy.
I just really love the flavor and the tone of the green and black tree folk from Lorwyn and Shadowmoor.
Ooh, Golgari.
And so the commander is the Sapling of Kul'Fenor, and she's awesome.
It's a she?
It is.
I remember the professor talked about.
That's right. According to the flavor text.
Yeah, according to that pronoun in the flavor text, that's all I'm going off of. It's so she's a 2/5, legendary, of course, tree folk shaman for 3 and then 2 hybrid green-black mana. Indestructible, which is really helpful.
Oh yeah, indestructible really? Generals are great.
It's the best. I didn't realize initially. I was just like, oh, this seems sweet. And then it turns out very, very good. And then this is the best ability. Whenever Sapling of Kul'Fenor attacks, which you can always do because she's indestructible, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, you gain life equal to its toughness, lose life equal to its power, and then put it into your hand.
Oh, interesting.
So it's life gain and card draw.
It does have a little bit of, because it's a tree folk, it's all about toughness here.
I'm assuming you would never build the deck so that it had like a bunch of creatures with high power, low toughness.
I mean, at the same time, though, it's not the worst because it is commander, and if you have a balance of the two, I guess. Well, we'll see what's going on.
I mean, I have no idea what creatures are in this deck.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But I'm assuming, based on that card, that you want big butts, right?
Every single card, every single creature is a tree folk.
Ooh, this very is, nice. So this it's full tribal.
This is the most, like, oppressively on message commander deck I've ever I've ever made, and you'll see why when we get to the spells. But yeah, the creatures, actually in the list that's here, I should update it because it still lists Oaknarl Warrior, who's totally boring. He's a 5/7 with vigilance and trample. He was replaced recently with the Twin Grove, the Colonia Twin Grove from M15, the one that
yes, that's right.
It's power toughness equal to your forests, and you get a two of them.
Yep.
Anyway, so yeah, everyone is a tree folk, and there's only one of them that has an even power toughness. Every single other one is greater toughness than power. So if I hit a creature, I'm drawing a card and gaining at least one, probably two or three life.
Which is pretty great, because you're doing that every turn.
Yeah, it turns out the sapling just combos well with tree folk.
Turns out.
Yeah. I mean, that's why the Duran deck works, too, is because of high toughness and the specific ability.
Now, yeah. Are there some standout creatures that you wanna talk about?
Yeah, so you've got stuff like Bossk Banneret. It's a 1/3 for one and a green, and it's tree folk and shaman spells cost one less to play. So
you need one of these in every kind of these decks.
Yeah.
It's like the Dragon Speaker.
Yeah,
and
there's
decks.
One for giants. And
Orchard Warden is a 4/6 for 4 green. Whenever another tree folk comes into play under your control, you may gain life equal to that creature's toughness.
Oh boy. So you're definitely gaining a lot of life in this deck. Is one of the main themes?
Yeah, but not intentionally. It just sort of it comes up because that's what tree folk want to do, it turns out.
Very green and on color of them.
Yeah, there's it's all about the number. When you cast tree folk, how many tree folk you control and how many forests you control are things that tree folk seem to care about. You look at the Dungrove Elder, power toughness equal to the number of forests you control. Seed Guide Ash, when it dies, you can search your library for 3 forests and put it into play.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap, that's really good.
Yes, very good.
Especially if you have a way to
amazing,
recur that.
That's amazing, yeah.
Recur that, yeah.
Thorntooth Witch is a tree folk that says whenever you play a tree folk spell, you can have target creature get +3/-3 until end of turn.
It's a free nameless inversion.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Dauntless Dourbark. Power toughness equal to the number of forests you control plus the number of tree folk you control. Just for the full combo.
Is that often the biggest thing on the board then? Because it just doubles up on both of those?
It's absolutely massive, yeah. Really cool creature, Heartwood Storyteller. 1 green for a 2/3. Whenever a player plays a non-creature spell, each of that player's opponents may draw a card.
Whoa. Oh, that's awesome.
That's commander
really
card.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah, that's a great card. I haven't seen that card in play before, but that is great.
It puts in work.
I bet. And then it makes people not want to play non-creature spells, which is great. I'm assuming there's a lot of creatures in this deck since the sapling wants to rip a creature card off the top of the deck. What do you have? Like, about how many creatures are you running?
35.
About a third?
Yeah, about a third creatures, and some of them make... Like, some of them make other creatures. They bring friends with them. Mm-hmm. Like, the Namata Grove Guardian makes friends. The Ambassador Oak comes with an elf. Some of them come with Sapperling. Some of them come with Kithkin.
But they're all tree folk specifically. So you won't see no Creekwood Legion here.
Yeah, exactly. Every creature actually... Yeah, it bums me out because there's stuff like Conifer Strider. Flavorfully, perfect. Not a tree folk. He's an elemental, right? It's like,
he's
oh,
not,
what?
That's weird.
He's made of a tree.
I know. He's literally a
conifer
tree.
Is a tree. Yeah. Yeah. That's just a flavor fail.
I know. Yeah.
Especially being from the Pacific Northwest, we're all like, come on, guys, come on. Make it a tree folk.
And then you look at stuff like Fendeep Summoner, which is a 3/5 for 4 and a black, because the black tree folk, it's so much a cooler flavor, I think, than the white tree folk. You tap it, up to 2 target swamps each become 3/5 tree folk creatures until end of turn.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
So I get to animate my swamps. And I do, of course, have... just for nostalgia value, a beta copy of the Iron Root Tree Folk.
I was going to say, you got to have the Iron Root.
It does nothing. It's just.
But it's the first. It's the OG.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, that art is absurd.
This is the new art we're looking
really?
At. The old art is not great, but it's beta. So what do you expect?
Yeah.
What's the new art? When you say new.
It's like two.
Oh yeah, tree-fold. Those are weird. Yeah. No.
You gotta go with the original.
Just a face on a tree, and a lot of them have protection from artifacts or do well for you if your opponent has artifacts, which is fun.
You just have natural artifact hate already in the deck, which is great.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, now I see him. Yep, that's the truth. That guy reminds me of that boss in Kirby that you have to spit apples back at. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about.
So what are some of the non-creature spells that you... Because you don't have a lot of slots, right?
Yeah, so this is where it gets interesting, because I really wanted to make this as flavorful as possible, and so I am running a lot of suboptimal removal just because it fits thematically.
Interesting.
There's stuff that's good, like for spells. There's Reach of Branches, which, of course, is a tribal tree folk, so that counts as a tree folk. You just get a tree folk token into play, and whenever you play a forest, you get this back from your graveyard.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, Reach of Branches is nuts. It's an instant for four and a green. And of course, there's stuff like Lignify, which is a tree folk aura, which is a one and a green for an enchantment creature, and the creature becomes a 0/4 tree folk with no abilities.
Ooh, it's removal.
It is.
It's kind of like Song of the Dryads a little. It doesn't do any permanent, but yeah. That's pretty good removal for green.
But then for my actual removal, I've got stuff like Cankerous Thirst, because the art on it is a tree folk just devouring an elf. and it's the one that it's a 3 and a hybrid green-black. If you spend black to play it, a creature gets -3/-3. If you spend green, a creature gets +3/+3. And if you spend both colors, then you get both effects.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
I mean, it's not normally a card you would play in Commander, but because there's a evil-looking tree on it, then you're compelled to, right?
Yeah,
it's definitely a tree folk.
I've got the Golgari Germination, which is whenever a non-token creature you control dies, you get a 1/1 sapperling, which is just because the trees are rotting and turning into things. Rending Vines it's one green, destroy target artifact or enchantment. If its converted mana cost is less than or equal to the number of cards in your hand, and draw a card, it's not good. It's an arcane spell from Kamigawa, but it's just because it's plants destroying
and it's
stuff.
Got vines.
Right?
Yeah, it's vines. Wow. It's vines wrapping somebody up.
How did you find all these cards that were specifically on flavor?
I just did a lot of looking through Gatherer and stuff. That's why I've got like Weed Strangle, which is a destroy creature effect for 5 that you also clash. Root Grapple, to be fair, is really good. It's because it's actually a tree folk card. It's a 4 and a green tribal instant tree folk. Destroy target non-creature permanent. If you control a tree folk, draw a card.
That is actually amazing.
That's actually pretty good.
In this deck.
Yeah.
It's very, very good.
Non-creature permanent, I mean, that's pretty big. You can get rid of a planeswalker with that thing.
Yeah. And then there's murder and some stuff in here. I need to actually change some of these spells out.
Now, do you have any
better?
I mean, the spikier player would put some like changeling type stuff in here. Do you do that, or are you just like nope,
no?
No,
these are all tree folk. These are all just
OG
like they
tree
say
folk.
They say tree folk on the card, yeah.
Or else they have a tree in the art.
Yeah, so I should probably look into maybe some changelings.
No,
but
no,
I don't know.
No, don't do that. Don't changeling, man.
I'm a fan. Of this,
yeah, keep
is.
Doing what you're doing. This is pretty cool.
And then one of my favorite cards. It's actually really not that good of a card necessarily, but it's where I get the namesake of the deck, which is the Dark Heart of the Wood. And it's the card.
Oh, this is an old card, I remember.
Yeah, it's the card, Dark Heart of the Wood. It was reprinted in Ravnica, I think, but it was originally from the Dark.
Yep.
And it's an enchantment for a black and a green, and it's Sacrifice a Forest, you gain 3 life. So it's like it's not amazing. I'm probably not sacking that many forests unless I'm super, super desperate. But it's just, it's in there because the whole deck is the Dark Heart of the Wood.
Yeah, that is Golgari at its essence. That's amazing. I mean, I'm sure you have used that ability and people look at you and go, God darn it.
You know, it's amazing. Zurin Orb is another card that's very similar to that. And it's amazing how that effect like actually does some work. Yeah, it changes the calculation enough that it... I mean, how often would you be in a game? It's like you could be dead or you could have 2 less land. What do you want?
Yeah, right.
You know, so.
In general, just the idea that you could be dead / you could do anything else to save that.
Yeah,
I'm totally
exactly.
Do it. I'm going to play Heartwood Storyteller in more decks. This card, I keep thinking about it. This is amazing. Whenever any player plays a non-creature spell, everyone else draws a card.
It's really good.
That should go in my five-color Nekusar deck.
Yeah, they should go in Animar as well.
Yeah, that's a good card.
It's super fun. And then, of course, for land, it's just a bunch of green-black land, Overgrown Tomb, Woodland Cemetery, Grim Backwoods, Pine Barrens, you know.
You've got Svagthos, the Restless Tomb, though. That is flavorful right there.
I do have Svagthos, yes. And also Tainted Wood and stuff like that. And, of course, Dryad Arbor, even though technically not a tree folk. I mean, it's Dryad Arbor.
It's a Dryad Arbor. Yeah, that's definitely. So technically, you have 36 creatures in the deck.
That's true, yeah.
Because the Arbor definitely counts as one.
Well, and then also, if you're looking, I mean, if you count Reach of Branches as a card that makes a creature, and also Hidden Ancients, which is one and a green for an enchantment, and it just sits there. But then if one of your opponents casts an enchantment, then it just goes, I'm a 5/5 tree folk now.
That's actually pretty good value, and you're definitely going to trigger it almost every single game.
Oh, for sure.
And no one's thinking about it. Whatever.
And the deck doesn't have a lot of low drop creatures, to be fair. If it has a downside, it's that, which is that, like, the curve sort of starts at 4.
That's what happens when you got so many big butts.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the card Gaea's Touch? Because I want your ruling on if this is a tree folk or what the heck this is.
I think I might have. I can't remember. I'm going to look it up right now, except I'm going to spell it correctly. How is it spelled?
G-A-E-A apostrophe S.
Yes.
Wow, this is an old card.
Oh, yeah, Josh. This one. It's an enchantment for green.
I'm just saying, maybe.
You may put a basic forest from your hand onto the battlefield, activate this ability anytime you can cast a sorcery, and only once each turn. So you get to play an extra forest.
Forest, yep.
Yeah.
And then sack it to add green to your mana pool. This might not be a bad idea, actually. This might help
Well, you're saying you don't have any low drops either, so.
True. This might help me ramp into my wall of four drops. I haven't even looked at the actual curve of this deck. I bet it's awful.
It's just very top heavy.
I don't know if this guy on the picture is a tree folk or not. He looks like he might be related to tree folk.
Yeah.
He's touching a tree.
He's like their cousin.
Tree folk, like definitely.
Might be tree kin.
Worst case, elemental, maybe some kind of dryad, probably tree folk. A little unclear.
So, I mean, this deck is definitely Enter the Jungle, right? This is like, welcome to the jungle. I've got all my tree folk here, and...
What's the most amount of life you've ever had at the end of a game with this deck?
That's a great question. I can't remember, but it was certainly up there. It's
like the hundreds, 200s?
No, I over 100, I think.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
No small feat. Now, I do have a question.
Yeah.
What does your deck do against cards like Sigarda? Or Flyers in general?
Oh, just Flyers in general?
Gain more life than they can do damage, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, commander damage, though, is a little rough.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Sigarda's sweet. Sigarda, actually, sometimes I swap out as general for Reese, just if I'm feeling
oh,
like
yeah.
Sigarda.
The deck is Sigarda plus any deck in those colors is good, no matter what.
Yeah, it's amazing that you could do that, because Reese is a very specific type of deck.
Yeah.
But you can just be like, I'll just put Sigarda, it'll still be good. Like, that's how good she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, literal Sigarda is tricky because she has hexproof, but otherwise I do have, like, I'm also playing, because I don't want to just die, I'm also playing, like, Ultimate Price and Go for the Throat and Prey Upon and stuff. Mm-hmm. But Flyers in general, I'm not going to lie, it's not good. It's not great.
You have life gain, though, so as long as they're not the commander, you might be able to just go toe-to-toe with them and just be like, hey,
you hit me for 6, I'll hit you for 15 or whatever.
Yeah, I'll swing in with all my tree. Do you have the new enchantment?
Assault Formation.
Assault Formation. Do you have that in there?
No, I haven't actually looked at this deck since Cons. I need to go take a look and see if there's some stuff I can add. But
I wonder if there are any tree folk.
It's probably not on flavor because it's meant. I think it has like a dragon or something.
It's got a dragon in the wall.
But
on
it does have to do with toughness.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Duran on the stick.
It would definitely be very good in the deck. I don't know flavor-wise if it could be allowed or not.
Yeah, that's a tough call for me, obviously.
Maybe not, because you just don't have that many creatures with Defender specifically. And that's definitely more of a Duran.
But it pumps toughness.
Yeah, that's true.
And it makes their toughness their power when they're attacking, basically.
Yeah.
They deal, like, it has that Duran effect.
The real question is, if I play Orchard Warden... and then play a tree folk, can I pump in response to playing the tree folk before Orchard Warden checks the toughness of the creature for the life I'm about to gain.
So whenever another creature comes into play under
Treefolk creature, yeah.
Yeah, under your control, you may gain life equal to that creature's toughness. Can you, are you asking if you can pump the new creature?
If I can pump the new tree folk with assault formation in response to the Orchard Warden's trigger so that I gain more life.
Yes,
I, this
you
is not
be
a good.
To.
This is not a good play. I'm.
Yeah, it's well, three mana for one life. But
well, what it is not, is it checks. Yeah. It's the state based action of it checking as soon as it resolves the pump and it sits there. The creature is that, and then as long as Orchard Warden's trigger is on the bottom of the stack and gets resolved last, it'll check it and be like, "Yo, you get some extra life, Graham. Congrats."
Sweet. That sounds right to me, but please, people, check with the judge because
no,
we get in trouble for this stuff.
It's right,
Jimmy.
Josh.
Wait,
I know.
Just leave us an out. Leave us an out.
Never. I'm Jimmy the Red. I'm all in or I'm all out. We made many rules mistakes on this show.
I'm sure you know how that goes, Graham.
Oh,
anytime
yeah.
that you're, yeah.
We've never made one mistake.
Flawless record.
We actually re-recorded an entire episode about a month or two ago because we got so many little things so wrong that we were like, this is embarrassing. We can't even have this episode out there. We got to redo this whole thing.
We've had to like add retractions at the beginning of an episode, like, hey, we're going to say this a couple times in this episode, but it's not true. So,
we had a disaster when Josh mentioned Worldfire as a card that we could play in EDH, and it's very clearly banned for good reasons. But we talk about it like four or five times in the episode, and just listening through and being like, don't say it, don't say it. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we said it again.
The worst part was we just did an episode about the entire band list two episodes before. Yep. So we had just literally talked about every band card, including Worldfire, and then, just spaced it. So.
Probably my best commander win was actually on a card that's now banned. It was Trade Secrets.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was
Was it banned when you played it as well? And no
yeah, were
knew?
You cheating?
No. This was very soon after those first commander decks were released, so it was before Trade Secrets.
Oh, so it wasn't banned yet.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And here's the thing: I wasn't playing the Trade Secrets. I was playing this super silly deck that I call the Janky Ballard deck, and it was Jaya Ballard
Jaya Ballard.
Yeah, is the commander, and it was all based around red discarding stuff. Like it was again on flavor, but not actually as functional as the Tree Folk deck. And another player at the table cast Trade Secrets, which is the one blue sorcery. Target opponent draws two cards, and you draw up to four cards. That opponent may repeat this process.
So it was up to you when he chose you.
Yeah,
right?
One of the other players played it. She picked me, and I was like, "Okay, I'll draw two cards." And I'm playing this red deck, and I'm completely out of gas, and I've got no hope of winning. And then she's like, "Cool, I draw two cards," and I'm like, I get to do this again if I want? She says yes. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I just kept drawing pairs of cards until I had like, I'd drawn like 30 cards or something ridiculous.
Yep.
And
I
was like,
why the card is banned, by the way.
I was like, okay, I'm done now. And then when the turn got back to me, I was able to burn one opponent out. And then I cast Conflagrate, which is XX red to fireball someone. I was like XX red dome you out, flash back conflagrate for red discard X cards.
Oh right, so you can flash back for your whole hand.
And you're like, yep, I got 28 cards.
I killed three players that turn and won the game.
That's awesome.
How did it feel to be the champion? It's truly on top.
It felt great because it was the dumbest way I've ever won a game of Commander.
Conflagrate is pretty nuts because it steals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or players. So you could just do it for two and do one to every single thing and person, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually you have to pay extra for that cost.
Well, you do. You have to pay X twice.
Right, yeah, right.
It is.
But, like,
it is
but when you just happen to have drawn like 40 cards, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
So there's my Commander Tales.
All right.
We all have good Commander Tales. That's hopefully next time we all hang out, we can definitely play it together because I had a blast getting to play with so many new people in Vegas. And you, did you come to the gathering or were you not in town yet?
The
may not have been in town.
I don't think he was at our party.
No.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was a fun time, though.
Night.
Yeah, we missed having you guys there.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
That would have been sweet. We could have maybe got some Conspiracy or some EDH games in. That would have been fun.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, we'll have to hook that up.
Ooh. Have you guys
maybe next time I'm up visiting my sister in Canada.
Conspiracy is probably one of our favorite draft formats.
Agreed. Ours as well. We went through, I don't know,
over two cases.
Yeah, just ourselves.
We've drafted the heck out of it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We love that format. Yeah. we love that format. We cheated a little. We started mixing it in with whatever the current set was. So we'd have like two packs of Conspiracy and two packs of Cons maybe.
Yeah, just to like mix it up a little bit. But it always works out really well, which is awesome. The cards just, I mean, the way they design it just works super fun. And sometimes you can just string together Conspiracies and break the game based on a new set.
It feels so much like EDH. That's the great thing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's limited commander.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it definitely is. That's why we love it.
All right, time for the end step.
End step. So we're moving on to talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. But what could that be? Graham, do you have anything for us? Anything cool?
Is there any like cool thing that you've come across recently in the world?
I started watching I started watching NXT recently. It was really good.
NXT.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are into professional wrestling at all.
Oh, it's WWE. Okay.
Well, we were just talking about cage matches.
Yeah.
I know a decent amount now because I have a couple of really good friends, Benji and Des Dolly, that are really into wrestling, and they taught me the world of it. And also, Benji is really good at shot calling. So he'll watch a night of, like, any one of the nights and be like, by the end of this episode, and he calls them episodes sometimes, like, this person's going to do this and that, and it happens. You're like, oh, amazing.
I do a lot of that myself. It's super fun to see how the storylines develop.
How do you get into NXT, like,
so
if you're not...
So here's the thing. NXT started as just, like, the developmental territory, basically,
to move them into the big leagues
for Raw. Yeah, it's like to train people. Like, it's actually run out of Full Sail University, and everyone there, they're training people in production and camera operating, and they're also training the wrestlers.
Interesting.
But basically, Triple H, who's now in a corporate role at WWE, sort of also secretly turned it into his own wrestling promotion that Vince McMahon doesn't have control over, basically. I mean, obviously he ultimately does, but I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of a backdoor pilot on a TV series, but he basically did that with NXT, and it's really good and a lot more entertaining than the main roster. The only problem I have is that the only place to watch it is on the WWE Network, which we can't really get in Canada because it is tied to cable companies and it is stupid and dumb.
It is stupid and dumb, as are most cable companies.
But thanks to the wonders of the internet, I'm sure you found a way.
We're not going to talk about how I'm watching this. I'm just saying.
I call you every weekend and I tell you what happened on the show.
Exactly. But yeah, it's really good wrestling. It's fun stuff.
That Very is cool. And right. It's also, I think, it's a little more raw, right? I mean, not to use the word, because
joke,
that's what they're trying to get to. Yeah, but they're all trying to prove themselves. So it kind of has that same, there's a lot of reality.
They're like the up-and-comers.
Shows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have exactly. A similar concept.
In before, so cool. Yes. In before comments that wrestling is fake.
Oh, yeah, of
yes,
course.
Guys,
we know this.
Yes. That's why I watch it.
Yeah.
Also, all the Marvel movies are fake.
What?
What?
Yeah. But But they're still entertaining.
No,
I don't know. Now that I know,
but
Iron Man was real.
No,
oh man.
I have had more entertaining conversations with people who check me in at hotels since the Avengers movies, because my last name is Stark.
Oh wow!
I would have thought Game of Thrones would have done it.
Yeah,
more mainstream people are aware of the Avengers than they are.
Yeah,
of,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
I got into a discussion with someone once. They're like, "Hey, all right, like Tony," and I'm like, "Yeah," or Eddard, and they're like, "Well," and I'm like, "What? what's wrong with Eddard?" And they're like, "Well, you know, Tony Stark's a billionaire." I'm like, "Eddard Stark was the king of the North." And they're like,
he
well,
did
he,
get his know. Head chopped off though. Oh, sorry, spoilers.
Yeah,
spoilers.
They're like, "Well, he didn't really live through season one," and I'm like, "That's cold. That's cold.
That is cold.
And well,
that
it's cold. It's cold in the north.
Less cool of a person either.
Cold in the north.
I would like a non-smoking room, please."
Yeah. And the guy's like, "Tony's been to space. Has Eddard been to space?"
Fine. Every Stark is cooler than me. Leave me alone.
Pretty much. Well, Graham, hey, thanks so much for coming on the show. We'll have to have you back sometime, especially if you have another awesome deck like this.
I'm working on something equally stupid, but I don't think it'll actually be as playable.
playable, shmayable, man. Yeah.
Josh made a deck with 33 or whatever Shadowborn Apostles, so you can play anything. If you
hey,
put
that
your heart
deck
into
is good.
It.
You kicked my butt with it.
It is good. Yeah. And I was amazed because it survived like 3 board wipes. I was like, I'm done. But I managed to come back each time. So
nice.
All right. You can find Graham's Twitter is @Graham_LRR. And you can go to loadingreadyrun.com. And you can also find Loading Ready Run YouTube /Loading Ready Run.
And you can find them on Twitch at twitch.tv/Loading Ready Run. You guys do so much content. It blows my mind how much you guys can actually get done. And you guys are a huge part of the community, too, which is great because I think it's awesome to have people that represent numerous different games and just sort of the nerddom in general. Because. Mm-hmm. You know, our friend like Revan Fuego does a great job of it on BJJ's Geek Nation. They just sort of talk about the breadth of stuff, which is awesome. So, yeah. Big ups to you guys.
Well, sweet, thank you. It was super fun talking about my dumb deck. I would love to come back at some point.
I'd love to play at some point.
Yeah, we need to play.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
But also, yes, come back on.
Sweet.
All right. Shout out to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Definitely check them out there on rocketjump.com right next to us. You can follow them at The MMCast. Our editor is Eli Cuevas. A special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who is at Living Cards MTG. He does a lot of the animation for our videos, so go check us out on YouTube if you want
to
see that.
Yeah, that's right. Subscribe to us on the YouTube channels. We are not as, I don't know, we don't proliferate as much as the Loading Ready Run boys and girls, but we do have our videos up every week, so you can watch a video version of our podcast and, you know, not do your work at work.
You can do your work and it can still be on the screen.
Yes. And actually you just play all of them in a row and then leave your computer on overnight and just go through the whole playlist so we can I'm just kidding.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening
and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.